Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to the Gaming Uncensored Roundtable for July. This month, we are going to talk about Super Nintendo games in honor of the SNES Classic with our boy Spider. Hey, Spider, what's up?
Not much.
It is just you, me, and Jamie. What's up, Jamie?
I'm here. What's up, guys?
We're going to have a good time.
That's right.
We're really happy.
I was going to say, I love the fact that Spiders is here because, like, Spider's that guy you want to have, like, a really, like, serious intellectual conversation with. and the rest of the guys are like, yeah, we can't do that. So it never happens. So this is the week for that. This is what we're going to do. Like, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And it's also nice that Spider's here because Spider came up with the topic that we're talking about this month. And so it would have been a bummer if you weren't here. So, yeah, we're going to have a good time. We're all old gamers who played a lot of Super Nintendo games. And so we're going to talk about Super Nintendo games in honor of the fact that the SNES Classic is coming out. So before we actually start talking about games themselves, let me ask you a question, Spider. Are you planning to buy the SNES Classic?
If I can get my hands on one, yep. I didn't have any interest in the NES Classic, but this NES one, absolutely. I mean, that was my gaming jam back in the day, and I would love to just have, like, a legitimate way to pick up those games and replay them. You know, I know everyone talks about Raspberry Pi and emulating, but then if you want to do it legally, you have to go buy the cartridges, and it's a whole mess. So I like the, you know, all the games in there, with the exception of, there's, like, the Kirby Golf one. And it would have been really nice if they could have got Chrono Trigger or something like that in there instead. Yeah. But with that exception, you know, the rest of them all look like, you know, awesome titles.
Yeah. For my money, Chrono Trigger is the one that's missing. That's the only, like, SNES game that I could think of that would make that bundle better.
I would add Final Fantasy II in, but I already have that game in, like, five different iterations on five different systems. So I probably don't need another one.
Fair enough.
The interesting thing about Chrono Trigger, I think, is that it was actually released on the PlayStation a few years ago in a remaster, and I keep waiting on that one to come up as a PlayStation Plus title, and it hasn't yet. I don't know why.
I have the disc for that.
Do you?
Yes. Well, my brother does, so it's in the family.
Nice.
that was, I don't remember if I ever played it. I remember being excited about it. I'm talking about the remaster. Remember being excited about it, but I don't know that I ever played it.
Yeah, I remember starting it, but not the PlayStation version, the original, and I didn't finish it, and I don't remember why.
Oh, it's so
I think
good.
It's possible I checked it out from, oh, this is going to really date me, back from Blockbuster back in the day. And
hey,
I'll probably talk, maybe we can just go into favorite games now, but, like, one of my favorites was Final Fantasy III, and so I had to check that game out over and over again and hope that no one would recheck out the same cartridge so that I could keep playing my game, because I never had the money as a kid to actually purchase the game, so I just kept renting it over and over until I could beat it.
It's
eventually, a couple of years down the road, I got the money together and bought the cartridge outright, but for the first time I played through it, I just kept hoping. I was like, oh, please don't save over, or please don't someone else get that cartridge. So
that's
phenomenal.
It's funny that you bring that up, because you're sitting with two guys that had, like, space leased at the Blockbuster. Like, we had cots and a little microwave and a little, like, break room back there, because we lived back there. And I was thinking about this weekend, and we've talked about it before on the show, but that whole experience of going to Blockbuster and renting those games out, like, they're to this day, there is nothing like it. And we're talking about the Super Nintendo experience. I think actually going and renting out the games was part of the experience for me.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I remember hopping on my bike. Jamie, did you roll there in your chair, or did you have somebody drive you to Blockbuster?
Somebody had to drive me because it was too far and I was depressed. Yeah,
Jamie lives
about
out in the sticks.
Right.
Yeah, the town I grew up in was way too small to have a Blockbuster, and so I didn't grow up with a Blockbuster, but we had a local video store, just some random creepy dude that ran the All-Star Video is what it was called back in the day. But it was five blocks from my house, and so it was a regular walk for me to go to the video store. I did the exact same thing. I hadn't thought about this for years, and so you talk about Final Fantasy III in that way. I didn't do it for Final Fantasy, but I did it for Zelda, A Link to the Past, where I just had to keep renting the game to make sure like nobody saved over. And I would I knew the guy who ran the video store, and so I'm 8 years old or whatever at this time, and I'd go in and be like, dude, like, if anybody checks this out, make sure they don't erase save three or whatever, you know, like, that's mine, I need it back when I get
you're
my
like
allowance.
Writing in marker whatever. On a piece of tape and putting it across the cartridge, like, please don't erase save three, please.
Man, what a different time in gaming. That's hilarious. I love that story, man. Thank you for bringing that up. That's great.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's funny because we all three did it that way. Like, yeah, I did it that way. I did that with multiple games. Like, I did that with, like, a couple of different games. I remember... I
mean, you had to with everything because everything saved to the cartridge back then. There was no such thing as a memory card.
Yep.
Like I remember when we're talking about Super Nintendo, and one of my classic Super Nintendo games, you guys are going to laugh, but I fell over backwards when Final Fight came out for the Super Nintendo. Like that was one of those, like, that was the most awesome game because I felt like I was playing the arcade game. It was one of those titles that matched the arcade version pretty much bit for bit, and I loved it, and I rented it multiple times and played it that way, and I bought it several. I'm like Spider with the games he was talking about. I bought it on several different iterations, but I first played it on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah. Let me ask you a personal question, Spider, if you don't mind answering.
Of course, I'm an open guy.
Yeah.
How old are you? 37.
Okay. So you're right there.
I'm in Jamie's league. I'm a little older than you.
Yeah, but we're all right there within a few years of each other. And so we kind of all grew up around it because obviously having similar stories, it definitely feels that way. And so, that was definitely the era of video games that we grew up in, what they look like, and is radically different than what it is now. So you've mentioned Final Fantasy 3/6. As listeners to the show who've been around for a while know, that's my all-time favorite game, and so it's by definition then also my favorite Super Nintendo game. I love that title. By the way I'll mention this. I actually didn't play that in like my original time with the Super Nintendo. I was a little older when I actually played Final Fantasy 3 for the first, I don't remember how old, but it was after I'd played Final Fantasy 7. Final Fantasy 7 was really the first Final Fantasy game I got super into, but I came back and played Final Fantasy 3 later on and fell in love with that game because it's phenomenal. That being said, what are some other Super Nintendo games that stuck with you?
So to stick in the Final Fantasy genre, Final Fantasy 2, like I said, since I've owned that in multiple iterations, one of my favorite, I guess we can combine my favorite memories with the story here. I rented it one time, and I think it was like the second time I re-rented it, and I was like, yes, the save's still here. So I started playing through, and I had been playing for like an hour and a half, like just grinding away and leveling up. And I got to this point where it was about to get to a save point. And, like, my brother came into the room. I don't remember. I think he hit the eject button on the Super Nintendo. And just, like, the cartridge popped out. And I was just like, oh. And so I knew I had to restart that. And, you know, and when you're younger, like, an hour and a half, that was a lot of game time. You know, now, like, we get used. I think over time you get used to, like, okay, something could screw up and I'm going to have to replay. And, you know, an hour and a half is kind of a lot, especially when your time is short. But still, it's not. you know, detrimental.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I have a ton of games to play right now, and the reason I haven't gotten any of them is because I'm recording Patreon content. I'm doing Life is Strange right now, and so I will spend an hour and a half or 2 hours recording that and doing that, and I don't have any time left. So I disagree. An hour and a half is still a long time. Like I've got right now, I've got Fallout 4, I've got Dishonored, I got all this stuff, but I'm recording these games for Patreon content, and when I get it done, I'm like, crap, that's all my gaming time. So I had the same problem that I had when I was a kid, and losing that save always sucked.
I guess the way I meant it is like an hour and a half seems so much longer when you're a kid than it does now. If you have to wait an hour and a half for something, you're like, okay. But like back then, that was like eternity. So
yeah,
at least it was something I could re-enjoy doing, though, playing back through. But yeah.
And that was also in the era of save points, which again is something that almost is non-existent in most games, not all, but in most games at this point. Everything auto saves and quick saves at this point, that even if you do like something catastrophic like that happens, it's not you go so far back. In those Final Fantasy games especially, some of those save points are spaced way out from each other, where you play a couple of hours between them, and there's not really anything you can do if you lose the content, or if you die or whatever. And so it's definitely a different time in games.
Absolutely.
You're talking about them being spaced out. I remember, because playing games is what I used to do every day after school. Like, I would come home, I would try and get my homework done, and I would sit in front of games until I went to bed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're playing along whatever game it is, and you're trying to get to a save point, and it's 9:58. And I don't know about you guys, but my dad was in my room going, it's time to go to bed. You should have been in bed a half hour ago. I'm like, Dad, I gotta keep going. I can't stop, because if I stop, I lose all of this.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys had that same issue, but that was my life as a kid. That was my whole thing. Was he was like, you gotta, like, we gotta go do something else, and I'm like, I can't.
Yeah,
I had a room in the basement, so sneaking off to go play after I went to bed was easy. It was because the Nintendo was down there too. It's just down the hall, and I was like, yeah, this is not a problem.
Yeah, my mom was pretty savvy. She actually, when she was younger, she played video games quite a bit too. When I was young, she was into Super Nintendo stuff, and so she knew things that most moms didn't know about video games. And so she would like call my bluff, you know, and be like, "Oh, I gotta just get to the next save," and she'd be like, "There's one right there. Just go over there and save it." I'm like, "Dang it, you know, like come on." None of my other friends' moms know about video games. So. Yeah. Again, different era of games for sure. Jamie, what other Super Nintendo games do you remember that you loved?
Well, I'm gonna throw one out there, and it's, I'm gonna bring it up because somebody brought it up last week or week before, because I think it's actually on the list. But Secret of Mana was one that I did not have a Super Nintendo in my house, but I remember going to a friend's house and him having this and him being like, look at this. And that was really, honestly, that was really my first experience with an honest to goodness RPG. I mean, that was the real deal. I mean, Zelda qualifies as an RPG, I guess. But Secret of Mana was like a legit RPG.
Yeah, I remember Secret of Mana to me was like Zelda, but prettier. You know, like it was like, oh, this is fancy Zelda in a lot of ways. So, yeah, That was a really, really good game. It may be the one that I was most surprised to see as part of the SNES Classic bundle, but one I was also super excited to see as part of that, because I really love that game.
The reason that I bring up the RPG-ness of it was this was before, I think this Secret of Mana came out before A Link to the Past, right?
I don't think so, but I don't know for sure. That's interesting. I'll look it up.
And at that point, I had played the original Zelda and I had played The Adventures of Link. And there wasn't just a ton of RPG as far as The Adventures of Link went.
Sure.
And I looked at Secret of Mana, and I was like, holy crap, there's an inventory system and potions and like everything. And it was just really cool.
Yeah. Secret of Mana came out about 2 years later. I hadn't realized this. I just pulled up a random screenshot of it. How much it looks like Chrono Trigger stylistically. Like, I mean, all those 2D sprite games kind of look similar. But it has a little bit more of that Chrono Trigger vibe to it. And little chick with an axe. Man, it's been a long time since I played Secret of Mana. I'm kind of geeking out about Secret of Mana all over again. So
that's I think that was like the second game I was actually able to buy. Like, I had either... I don't think I had a job at that point, but I was definitely getting an allowance. And so I just like save up and you'd read through any episode or any copy of Nintendo Power you could get in like the library, and you'd see stuff coming. And you'd be like, okay, I got to start saving up for this. This looks amazing.
Yeah,
man, we got to talk about that for a minute, because
Nintendo Power.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Because that was a big deal, because when I was growing up, I didn't have any money. Like, I love what Spider just said, because when I was growing up, I didn't have any money. And so I couldn't pay for a subscription. I didn't get a subscription to Nintendo Power until I was like, I don't know, 14. And a buddy of mine got it for me for my birthday. And at that point, you know, Nintendo Power was almost dead. But you were back in the day when I was young, I would go anywhere I could go to find a Nintendo Power. Like, yep. I couldn't subscribe, but I would go to the library, or I would go anywhere that it might be carried and look through it.
Yeah, either the library, or I had a best friend that was an only child, and so he had a subscription, and so I would borrow his magazines and bring them back the next week or whatever.
Yeah. My younger brothers are significantly younger than I am. The oldest one is 11 and a half years younger than me. So for 11 and a half years, I was an only child as well. Yeah. I had a Nintendo Power subscription back in those days. That was one of my Christmas presents every year, was a subscription to Nintendo Power, because that was it. That was how you found out about games, and like flipping through pages of a magazine to see screenshots, which was the craziest thing. And they'd always put the real stylized graphics in there, and you're like, oh, this game's gonna look awesome. Yeah, it looks like every other Super Nintendo game, and you're like, okay, it's still cool, whatever, you know. But it was a much different hype machine than what we have now with the internet and podcasts, for crying out loud, and everything else, obviously. Yeah, it was a lot of delayed gratification back then.
I mean, yeah. For crying out loud, we just did two videos that are going up on Facebook. Look how crazy is that? Yeah. I remember back in the day looking at Nintendo Power, thinking that was the height of information. It wasn't like that you glossed over it. It wasn't like that you just sort of skimmed the articles. You read every single page twice.
Yep.
And then you went back through it and read it again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were depressed the next month because you had to wait a month. I mean, like... Yep.
I would show my mom pictures. I'd be like, I want this one. I want this one, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Tommy, since you mentioned Christmas there, I just wanted to mention another game. So I never had a NES growing up. My friend that was an only child had one, and so I played like Dragon Quest and we played Turtles together and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Turtles! But I never,
So but we had an Atari originally, and so that was my gaming machine for the longest time. And there was like the big crash that happened, and they had Atari games on sale for like 10 cents or something like that at the store. And so my mom bought like, I don't know, 100 of them and just like hid them away for Christmas and would roll them out, or for birthdays and stuff, and would roll them out to us in packs of 10 or whatever. But we'd eventually find where the box was and like sneak the games out and go play them and then stick them back in the box and shove them back under the bed. But so I remember walking into Toys R Us one day and seeing Super Mario World playing on a Super Nintendo for the first time, because I'd read it was coming, and you know, Nintendo Power, and I was like, oh, I want to go see that. So I was geeking out over it. And this was probably like 2 years after the Super Nintendo had come out, because we didn't get ours for a couple of years after. It was 2 or 3 years. But anyway, so Christmas comes around that year, and I'd put Super Nintendo on there every year up to that point. I was just like, oh man, I hope we get it this year. And we had gone through and we had opened all of our presents, and there was no Super Nintendo, and I was kind of bummed. But I mean, you know, I was trying to entertain myself. I think I got also like one of those handheld Street Fighter games where it was just the, there's like 5 outlines on the screen, and so there's only like 5 different moves you could do or whatever. But I was entertaining myself with that, and then I all of a sudden we had a fireplace, and I looked at the fireplace and I realized that behind the grate there was a box sitting there, and I was like, wait a minute. And so like I screamed, and I pulled open the thing. It's, you know, there's the Super Nintendo box sitting right there. And just, well, then my, you know, brothers are, and my sister are excited and yelling. And so that was a pretty awesome Christmas memory. So I think we played Super Mario World for like, I don't know, the next eternity until we bought something else. But that was just one of my favorite memories.
We have to tell people, and Tommy and I talk about this a lot, Spider, it sounds like you were kind of in the same boat with us. When we were growing up, our family literally did not have any money. There was no money. So whatever you got for Christmas, if my parents bought me a game, it was a big deal.
Yeah.
Like that was a big Christmas present. And you weren't going to get a lot else because there was no money. And so when that happened to me, like Spider was just describing, and you found something that you didn't expect, or some miracle happened and you had a console under the tree, that was a big deal. And I look at the way that my nieces are now with their phones and all the stuff they got, and I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't trade that for a second. am I misspeaking at all? I mean, I'd like you guys to talk on this, because we, like I said, when we were growing up, we literally had nothing. At least I mean, it was very, very slim.
Yeah. For me, video games were the thing that I got. And it was really, it was consoles and not hardly ever games, with a few exceptions I've talked about on the show before, getting Ocarina of Time for Christmas, which was a huge deal. Right. But essentially the deal was when there was a new console, it's happened twice when I was growing up, basically the Super Nintendo and then the N64. I got those as gifts, but I was on my own for games that we're going to get you the thing to play them on. You got to figure out how to play stuff. And because I was a kid and didn't have much money, I rented games all the time. That's the only way I ever was able to play games, because I could go rent a game for 3 days for $1 or $2 or whatever it was at the video store back then. And so that was my whole, and why to this day I still primarily get games via Gamefly now, but forever I've always been much more of a renter than a buyer, just because that's how I grew up. sure, in like retrospect, there's something kind of romanticized about that, that like I appreciate that, like the experience of going to the video store and with friends, and like we would split the cost of a game, understanding that we were both going to get to play it and all this kind of stuff. If you asked me then if like I could just have games, I would have been much more interested in just having games, obviously. Right. But yeah, it is nice to look back on it, especially now being in a place where I'm solidly middle class and can buy games and don't have to really worry about that. It's cool. Like it's kind of a fun, you know, progression of things, and still, you know, 30 years later playing games and loving them, which is cool.
Absolutely.
To me, like I said, all of that stuff that you just brought out, to me, all of that was part of the Super Nintendo experience. Because when any of those games that you picked, like Spider was saying, you had to be careful to do certain things, not to erase the save or to, you know, to not like to make sure you were real careful when it got turned off. Like I knew one part of my family that just left theirs on all the time. Okay, like it was just on. You walk in a room and it's on, and because they didn't like you said, you couldn't save. And so I remember going to the video store and not finding that game that I wanted and being so distraught. You know, it's like you wait to get to Friday, you run in there and you're trying to find it and it's not there. And you know the people at the video store are laughing at you because you've waited all week to play this game and it ain't there. And all of that when I was growing up was part of the experience for me.
Yeah. 100% agree. It was definitely a much bigger deal than log on to Steam and download a game, which is now really, really handy. But yeah. I'm going to throw out a couple other titles just really quick, cause I've said this many times before. I consider, the Super Nintendo personally to be the golden era of video games for me. And so I just love so many Super Nintendo games. Super Metroid obviously is one that I'm really big on. I've talked about that one a ton. Super Mario World, that Spider talked about, to this day is my favorite Mario game. I still have that thing almost completely memorized, where all the little secret exits are to the levels and everything like that. Super Mario Kart though was also one I loved, played tons and tons of that. And then for me personally, a kind of random, maybe off the beaten path one that I was such a big fan of when I was young was the Bomberman games and Super Bomberman on the SNES. That was kind of this puzzle battle beat 'em up kind of thing, and yeah, I love those titles too. They're not my top whatever, but just as fun Super Nintendo games, I dug those a lot. And so there's a billion more I can go on.
Do you remember? I have one that's in my mind right now. And back in the day, another thing that we haven't talked about, I guess it goes in with Nintendo Power and the big deal that was. But marketing was a huge deal. And the one that sticks in my brain right now is Star Fox. When Star Fox came out, there was literally nothing like it. Yeah. And I don't remember how they marketed it about the graphics and the way it looks. Like I know.
Or just go on YouTube. You can find commercials.
The Genesis was all about the blast processing, but when Star Fox came out, they had some special buzzword that Star Fox did that no other game had done up to that point, and there was nothing that looked like Star Fox anywhere. And I remember that being such a huge deal.
It was the Super FX graphics. I had to look
it
up. Because I did remember that too. Super FX, that was their big buzzword around that. yeah, that was one of those games that you went to get super to get Nintendo Power to see screenshots of. Like it was this huge deal that this was a 3D flying game, and it was these polygons, and like, you know, go look at an image of Star Fox now. It's hideous comparatively, obviously. But at the time on the Super Nintendo, it was such a big deal. And I just remember being enamored by that, this 3D world that this game created. Yeah, that's a really, really good one. I'm glad you brought that up.
I just like, seriously. And I'm glad that Spider brought it up, because now that when we hear about some of these games, you get really upset. But Spider said something earlier. Remember back in Super Nintendo days, Street Fighter 2 especially was a huge deal.
Yeah.
That was another huge deal. Mm-hmm. that like people would gather at their houses and just like pass the controllers around. And I remember, like, I've been in the chair my whole life. I've always had bad reflexes, and I've never been good at Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat's another one. We need to talk about that in a second. But I want to tell you this story. So I'm at a friend's house, and they're all playing Street Fighter, and I told them, of course, I had the arcade stick with the turbo, right? And I'm like, I look at my one friend, and I'm like, you let me use turbo, I can totally beat you. And he's like, no, you can't. And I said, yeah, I can totally beat you. Let me use turbo, I can totally beat you. And so he takes the controller, I take my controller, I turn turbos on, I'm like, I'm going to kill this guy. And he smoked me. Like, I just got smoked. Like, just like, no contest. And I remember being so, like, dejected. But that was the big deal. Like, there was a time period in there where the best fighting game on the planet was Street Fighter II. And it went on for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. I played Street Fighter 2 in college. Like, it was a big deal forever. Yeah. You're absolutely right. In a time where fighting games were a much, much bigger deal, obviously. You mentioned Mortal Kombat in there as well, which to me was always a Genesis game because the Genesis version had blood. Like, it was right. Like the weenie version on the Super Nintendo. Like, I wanted to play the mature version.
Didn't it have green blood or something?
It had something like it was slime or something. It was so bizarre. What used to be controversial in video games, speaking of how times have changed. So anyway, thanks for hanging out, Spider. It's a fun conversation. I love the Super Nintendo, and so yeah, anytime we get a chance to talk about Super Nintendo games, I'm gonna be all over it. So thanks for hanging out, and also thank you for your support, and everybody else who supports us via Patreon or any way else. We love you guys. It's such a big blessing for us to get to do this, and not only the fun that we have doing the show together, getting to talk about video games and geek out, but also the fact that you guys appreciate it enough to support us in different ways, and that means the world to us.
It's really good to be able to do these type of shows, because I've been snickering to myself the entire show, knowing that Chad is listening, trying really hard not to throw up in his mouth, because this would be one of these discussions that he would just like, okay, I'm falling asleep over here.
Yeah.
But hey, I'm glad you weren't around this week, buddy, so we could have this discussion.
No joke. This is the best week for Chad to miss. He's the least nostalgic person I think I've ever known.
Yeah, he just doesn't give a crap about anything. It's like,
he doesn't, man.
The newest and the greatest thing. Like, let's get that and forget the old stuff. Just burn it down. It doesn't matter. That's Chad all day long. Which, by the way, the next... When the 6K TV comes out, we know where to go, because Chad's gonna have one.
Yep.
Like that's gonna happen. So yep. Thanks so much for hanging out, Spider.
We appreciate you a ton.
You're welcome.
For sure. Let me also mention really quick, if you're interested in participating on the roundtable with us, you absolutely should, because it's super fun. We really enjoy doing it. You can find details about that over at the Patreon page. Go to gamingunsensored.com and the Patreon links right there at the top. So,
And if you need another reason to go over there, there is a metric crap ton of content over there.
Yeah.
I have a ton of games to play, and I'm not playing any of them because I'm producing Patreon content. And I love the Patreon content I'm producing, but it ain't Fallout 4. So
that's fair. There's also new video content that we just recorded earlier today that's going to be going up in the next couple of weeks, and those videos are super fun for us. We're assuming you guys are enjoying them too. We're having fun putting them together, and so a couple more games we're talking about. If you have any requests for those games, Patreon people, let us know. If you're not on Patreon,
you guys fulfilled mine for what was it, Ooblets or
right? Yeah, Ooblets. And so
Spider, did we do well?
Oh, of course. I wanted more. It wasn't long enough.
There you go.
See, like, we've been doing this 12 years, and people don't get really excited until we get on video, and I don't really understand that, but okay, whatever.
Whatever. It's fun. So we're enjoying it. So, yes, lots of good stuff on Patreon. We definitely want to make it worth your time and worth your money if you decide to go over there and support us that way. So, all that being said, for right now, we are done with the roundtable for July. We will be back next month. We are Gaming Uncensored, and we are out.
Brought to you by Colonel Duff. Duff, helping a random handicapped guy in the middle of nowhere. Only on Gaming Uncensored.